everyone, and welcome back to Phone Show Chat, our usually fortnightly podcast where Joe and I yak about phones, and usually we bring a guest in, and today's guest is Gavin Fabiani Le Monde. Hello, Gav, how are you doing?
Not too bad. Hi, Joe.
Hello, how are you doing, mate?
Yep. Good to have you on the show. I don't know when you were last on. Obviously, not since Steve retired, but probably, is it 6 months or a year?
It's probably a year, just over a year now.
Just over a year, right, okay. Yeah. Not sure what you were using back then, but we'll come to that in a few minutes when we have done the basic furniture of the show. This is for PSC 875. It's Monday the 8th of December. And we've got an extra show coming up for you next week because we've got so much stuff to catch up with. We didn't want to eat into the interesting stuff that Gav's going to talk about. So we thought we'd throw an extra one in next week and mop up all the loose ends because there's a lot going on with new phones all over the place for both of us. And we'll come to that. Phoneshowchat.uk is our new look website. There's two S's in the middle of that. So don't forget that bit. Phoneshowchat.uk. TedSalmon.com is probably the best place to go other than that to catch all the other audio podcasts we're involved in and all the MeWe groups and all the rest of it. Do join us in the MeWe group, particularly the PSC one, obviously, as this is the PSC podcast we're doing today. And we'll have a natter about what people have been saying in the MeWe group to begin with. Gav, could you, can I hand over to you for the first one?
You can do indeed. So up first, Phil Hendry, we all know Phil. He's given his initial thoughts on the Oppo Find X9 Pro. Some background, really. He's previously had the S24 Ultra. So it's quite an interesting comparison. So on the sort of tech, on the specs front, he's saying storage, both 512 gig of storage. The RAM, Oppo has a bit more RAM, 16 gig versus 12. He reports back that he's finding the cameras on the Oppo clearly better. There's a lot more detail in both the average day-to-day shots and also in the zoom, better in all aspects. I imagine that's also the sort of color profile that the Oppo runs, which is really good. He's happy with the display, although he says the S24 is marginally better because it has that anti-reflective coating, but he's happy with both. He's saying on the sound front, the S24 has the upper hand because it has a bit more volume and the tone is a bit nicer, fuller, but there's not much in it. And I suppose you also have to have context. These speakers are on a mobile phone, so you shouldn't be expecting the world as long as it can do what you need. I suppose that's all that matters. From a performance, he doesn't do any gaming, so he's saying both give him a very similar experience. So calling that a draw. He does find the security aspect better on the Oppo, actually miles better. He's saying that the fingerprint recognition and face recognition work superior on the Oppo versus his Samsung. Battery life, he just can't get over this. He's saying the Oppo is insanely good. And on his first run from 100 to 7%, he got 14-hour screen on time over 2.5 days. And it's in a totally different league. Well, I've had Samsung Ultra phones before, and that is just huge, huge difference. He enjoys the haptics from the Oppo more than the Samsung. There's more control, nicely implemented across the whole device. And from the UI point of view, ColorOS versus One UI, he's saying both are a very good experience, so he's calling that a draw. From the ergonomics, he finds the Oppo has a slightly smaller display at 6.78 versus 6.8 on the S24 Ultra, but the Oppo is more hand-friendly and the weight distribution is perfect. So for him, it's another win for the Oppo. And on the sort of financial side, he's saying the Oppo was significantly cheaper. The S24 was £1,249 with a £100 discount, but he got the Oppo from Currys at £949. That is pretty good going. So he's saying that in conclusion, the S24 served him really well for the best part of 2 years and was a very nice phone. And he's thinking that this Oppo should be a three-year phone for him. It's that good. And he's really enjoying the cameras and the battery life. And considering that some people, battery longevity and cameras are what you use the phone a lot for, I can see why he'll keep this for quite some time. So that's Phil's little rundown. Pretty good, cool, if you ask me.
The battery from most of the Far East outfits are just getting better and better now. And every week there seems to be a new story where someone else is pushing the limits and the silicon carbon, is being thrown in left, right and centre. While the big boys, the big three, if you like, are all sitting pretty and concerned, I suppose, about pushing those boundaries with them in the Far East. But I think Honor as well, Joe, you know, with the batteries, I found with my little Honor here, it's just so markedly different to most others.
Yeah, it's definitely good. It's a mixture of the efficiency of the chipsets and the battery capacity together as well. You're just getting much better results.
Yeah. Have you had a Oppo lately, Gav, or not had hands on?
No, but I'm familiar with, I've seen lots of reviews on these Oppo phones, and they're nice. You know, the sort of Chinese type phones are just getting ridiculously good, and these carbon batteries, silicon carbon batteries, and the capacities that they can stick in are just incredible. You know, 7,500 milliamps, so you know, 2-day battery life, and you know, that does make a difference to just how often you need to charge it. And then you've always got the fast charging, really fast charging, so you know, battery life doesn't become an issue on these new phones.
No, and I find that the Oppo, like Phil's saying, the Oppo and the OnePlus software, the colour and the oxygen, are actually really, really good now. In the old days, I think it was just not very good and didn't like it at all. But I do think that they've now come on and they're much more usable and interesting and different in many ways. And it's not the headache it used to be. So kudos to them.
What's interesting about the Oppo, this one's actually MediaTek. The top-end MediaTek, yes. Dimensity chipset, which is not as many around in globally with that chipset. But, yes, that's partly why the battery life's so good as well.
Yeah, now, which one did I have? The X8 Pro, I think it was, and that had the 9400 Dimensity in it. And I had no complaints about that at all. I mean, of course, I'm not a gamer, so I wasn't probably pushing it as much as I could. But looking at other reviews, like Gav says, you get a feel for what other people are saying. And no one had a complaint at all about the Dimensity. So I think those chipsets are up there and, you know, being taken seriously from a place where they were kind of second rate not so long ago, but now they're actually very good.
It's good for the market, pushing Snapdragon to keep innovating.
Indeed, yes. So thank you, Phil, for that bit of feedback on that. The Oppo Find X9 Pro versus the S24 Ultra. Steve Litchfield is next on Simjacking, Belt and Braces time. After more scares on identity theft, Simjacking, and after being unconvinced by Three's rhetoric on keeping my account safe, my two-step authentication for my Google account, the key to everything in my life, is now set to a SIM number that I've never used for anything else online and which no one knows about. I keep this in my second phone, so even if a hacker tried to pretend to be me, armed with my address and date of birth, and planning to claim that my phone had been stolen and he or she needed a new SIM card to be authenticated, and even if Three believed them and allocated them a new SIM so that they could have my phone number, then they still couldn't get to my Google account because the recovery phone number is the one which only is known to Google and over which I have full control. So, yeah, I totally get that. Having a second device that you don't use for anything sits in the glove box and you just use that as a security device, basically. And that's exactly what Steve is doing there. So that's his top tip. Anyone here been kind of sim-jacked or had attempts at theft on their phone?
No, but I've seen it happen quite a bit. Yeah, sadly, there's fraudsters out there all over the place. It's horrible.
Most famously, Richard Yates, I suppose, Gav. He was the one that I remember most clearly having a really, really hard time with this, having been attacked and hacked. Do you remember that?
Well, the thing to do is to change the... First of all, my SIM has changed the PIN on my SIM.
Mm-hmm.
And second, I'm not going to say what security I've got on my accounts, but it's not the normal security, so... that's just across everything I have. You just have to, you know, be, I think you've got to take it very seriously.
Yeah.
And it is something that can be done, but most people don't change their SIM code that they have, PIN code. Which is the first thing I would do is change that.
Yep, sure. Okay. So thanks, Steve, for that. And, Gav, your thoughts on that as well. So now let's go to the guest scala, and because we've cleared the decks for next week, you've got the whole show to yourself here, Gav. So take it away, and you can talk about whatever you like for as long as you like. How about that?
That's very kind of you. Yeah, so obviously it's been a year, just over a year since I've last been on, and for those that didn't know, last May some idiot of a driver hit my car head on and left me as a patient in hospital for 5 months. So obviously I came out of hospital in September last year and had to then start my rehabilitation and recovery, pretty much starting from scratch, from a, you know, walking was, could I probably walk about 50 yards, I think, when I first came out of hospital. So I spent a lot of time on that and still am, because when you've been in hospital for that length of time and had so many injuries, it just takes a lot of time. But while I was in the hospital, I did have, I think it was the iPhone 16 Pro Max. And at the time, I just couldn't change anything, you know, phone-wise, because there was so much going on, I just had to keep what I had. And I just wanted the consistency. You know, I had all using it for storing medical information and all sorts and sharing stuff. But come sort of March, beginning of March, what year we're in, 25, I really was getting bored of the Apple iPhone and really wanted to up the ante from a camera perspective and picked up the Xiaomi 15 Ultra. And weirdly enough, I still have that phone. So what's my view on the Xiaomi 15 Ultra? Well, I'll sort of go through some of the positives and some of the negatives of it. Obviously, I still love the phone because I still got it. But to enable that particular change, I obviously had to sell the iPhone. I had to sell the Apple Watch Ultra that I had, Ultra 2 it was, which was quite sad because the Apple Watch Ultra 2 was the device that called the ambulance for me when I was unconscious in the car. But I really wanted to have a watch that would help me with my fitness recovery, and the Apple Watch wasn't the device to go for. So I've got a Xiaomi 15 Ultra, and I've paired that with a Garmin Epix Pro Generation 2. It's a 51 millimeter size, so it's huge. It's in the sort of white finish with a sapphire glass and titanium body. And I haven't looked back at all. That's such a great combination. One thing, because of the way Apple locked down their ecosystem with smartwatches and just try and favor their own Apple Watch, when the Garmin is paired to any Android phone, you have far more functionality when it comes to notifications and how the Garmin watch can respond to notifications. So in my case with the Xiaomi, when a notification pops up on the Garmin watch, just pressing a couple of buttons, I kind of read the notification. I kind of deleted it without touching the screen, just using the buttons on the side of the Garmin watch. But I can also do quick replies in split seconds, something that you can't do as quick on an Apple Watch or with the Garmin paired to an iPhone. So having the Xiaomi on an Android with the Garmin works very, very well. I still have iOS with an iPad Pro 13 M4, and I've got a MacBook Air M1, which was I've had for quite some time now. So some of the things that I've really, really enjoyed on the Xiaomi are the cameras, both from a photography point of view and a videography. The video and photos consistently are absolutely incredible. They are awesome. They aren't smartphone over-sharpened mess of photos. They are very natural looking. I use the Leica authentic mode to have that more natural sort of pro camera look and feel. They have proper depth, there's a lot of mood, a lot of the contrast is great. I hardly ever edit the photos either because they just look so good out of the camera, very natural, but they just have a lot of sense of emotion from the photos. And literally, whether I use the front selfie, whether I use the rear cameras, whether it's my dog running or I need to use the video function, it all works really, really well. And even the microphones on the Xiaomi 15 Ultra are superb. They're very, very good. And I would say compared to the Apple iPhone 16 Pro Max that I had, there is just no comparison in terms of quality. Now, if you were a pro, someone that's a professional using video, maybe the Apple ProRes fancy schmancy stuff that it can do is something you might need, but I don't need to use any of that. I just need very decent 4K video quality, and I shoot everything in 4K, and it's excellent video, absolutely excellent, very well stabilized, very well balanced, and like I said, all the photos are fantastic. And then when you actually explore the Xiaomi camera app itself, you can shoot in pro mode for both the photo and video and have a wealth of additional options. You can create your own presets to do certain things as well and number the presets. You then got the photography kit, which you clip onto the phone itself. So then you've got, you've got all the shutter controls and zoom controls.
Have you got that then, Gav?
Sorry?
Have you got the photography kit?
Yeah, it came with it. Yeah. It was
excellent.
Yeah, and it is. It has an extra bit of battery in the photography kit. You've got, and it connects via USB, so there's no latency as well. It plugs into the side of the phone. You've got the lanyard, and for me also, you with the photography kit, you can then screw on 67mm filters. So you've got ND filters. I've got 5-star filters. I've got CPL filters. You can just go wild and unleash your creativity. Unfortunately, I've not been well enough to actually do as much as I want, but I have tried a few things here and there, and the results are so good, so good. And then there's all the special modes, and I think, Joe, because you've got Honor phones, you'll be familiar with some of these, where they have sort of star mode, light trails. There's an ultra macro mode, which is ridiculously good. There's you can use the full sensor size and do a high resolution photo if you want that level of detail. There are so many different camera modes and camera options, and they're all built into the camera app, and it's actually quite easy to use once you get the hang of it. Then there's the street photography mode. So if you're into street photography, there's like Ultra Snap, where you literally just double click the power button and it's taken the shot for you in a split second. And then it also recreates the Leica, because it's a partnership with Leica. So even the shutter sound can be customized as well. And the shutter on-screen shutter button, you can customize that to whatever you want. So you can either use some of the Leica options for the Leica color button, or you can create your own. So you have a bit of fun as well. So from a photography video aspect, I haven't used a better all-in-one device really, really, really impressive. But I also have an Insta360 X5, which is a 360-degree camera. So when I've got using that and the Xiaomi, I've sort of covered, from a creativity point of view, every single camera angle you want. The Insta360 X5 can create drone-like shots without using a drone. So I've got everything I could need in one, and both devices work and pair very well together. But that's just one aspect of this phone. You then look at what else does the Xiaomi 15 Ultra and its offer, and it's the, you know, Xiaomi's top of the range phone. So you look at perhaps sound. So it's got good speakers. Are they the best I've ever heard? Probably not, but they're still very, very good and definitely good enough. But the Bluetooth sound and the USB sound are outstanding. It has something called Snapdragon Sound, which is the Snapdragon's top-end audio circuitry built in. So if you're listening to with Bluetooth headphones that are compatible with Snapdragon Sound, you will get an absolutely outstanding lossless audio quality. And I do have the Xiaomi Buds, what they call now. Did I put note what they were? The new Buds, the wireless earbuds that were launched at the same time, and they actually connect to the phone via Wi-Fi, not Bluetooth.
I was about to say that. Yeah, it's really interesting, yeah, isn't it?
So, but you can obviously get better wireless buds than the Xiaomi ones as well, which I've listened to on this phone, and yeah, it's just a whole different ball game altogether. But that just adds to this really incredible piece of kit. You've got a really good screen. It's not massive, a massive-sized phone. So you look at an iPhone Pro Max, it is a brick. And it feels heavy. The Xiaomi is much easier to use one-handed. It's slightly smaller. But it has other little features like the infrared blaster, so I can turn my telly on, I can change the channels, I can play the DVD player, I can go into someone's house and change their TV channels, or could be in a restaurant and change the volume there. You have a lot of fun with that. And it's all built in. And then you've got some of the other positives. It's got 90-watt wire charging and 80-watt wireless charging. And you can reverse wireless and reverse... So you've got reverse wireless charging and reverse wire charging. It's water and dust resistance, IP68, 128 hertz screen. I got the beautiful two-tone finish, which is the silver and black leather, with a terabyte of storage. It's an absolute beast. It is just a beast, and all the extras that you can do, the AI stuff that's built in, which some of it you might say is gimmicky, but it works. It's got absolutely everything bundled in. And then you think, well, it can't get any better. But then recently, in the last month, HyperOS 3 came along and it just literally polished up the software all through the whole system. So it's sort of copied Apple with their, what's it called? The island, the dynamic island, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So Xiaomi has the same thing now. And it works really well. In fact, it's got a bit more functionality. So it's just a very well polished device with one flaw, battery life. Mm-hmm. Because the camera is so powerful, and the optics, you know, there's huge sensors across all the lenses. When you use the camera, it does start pulling on that battery. So yeah, if you're not using the camera too much, you're okay. But as soon as you start using the camera, it does stop. The battery life is average, I would say. It did got, before HyperOS 3 came, the month before, it had an update, and suddenly the battery life was incredible. It was absolutely incredible. Now HyperOS 3 has arrived, and it's not as good, and I imagine there's some refinements behind the scenes that need to happen. But because it charges so fast, and because it lasts long enough for me, I will use it in the car for short journeys when I've got Google Maps running. I never charge it in the car, even with Google Maps running. I might do, you know, a few journeys with the maps running. I've got music playing via Bluetooth. I've got some camera and stuff and video going. The battery life is good enough, but there are phones with better and longer battery life than the 15 Ultra. So,
just quickly,
really,
Gavin,
all in all, it's amazing.
You're saying the battery issue is more just with the camera. Is it decent when you do other things, like you said, Google Maps?
Yeah, so if I'm not using the camera, I work 3 days a week. I can work 3 days a week at the moment. So I always have Google Maps running, and I'm streaming music from YouTube at the same time. But I'll never plug. I won't plug in the phone to charge in the car. It's fine. And again, when I drive home and I've used the phone throughout the day, I'll use it in the evening and whatever, social media, read this, read that. It's absolutely fine. And in fact, I'll plug it in overnight to charge for a bit. Or sometimes if I don't use these, I've got the really fast 90 watt charger. I've dropped the charging speed down because you don't need to have it on the boost wireless charging at 90 watts. If you don't need it, and I don't need to charge the phone at that speed all the time. So I reduced the charging speed down because it give me better, it will keep my battery health better for longer.
Yeah.
Mainly because it's fine for me. But if I was going out for a whole day, routinely, you know, because the camera's so good, you're going to use it more, and that's just the fact of life. It is that good. So naturally, you're going to reduce the battery. But I also bought Xiaomi's battery bank that does have the actually just 120 watt wired charging, so it easily does the full 90 and can recharge the phone in, I don't know, 45 minutes flat from zero. But also, if I was going out for a day using it as the camera, I'd put the photography kit on, which has literally an extra battery built into the photography kit. And in the photography kit settings, you can say once your phone battery gets to 20%, then kick in that photography kit battery to start recharging the phone a bit. So you can control the percentage of when that photography kit battery kicks in. You can do it at 20%, 30%, whatever you want, basically. You can adjust it.
Nice. Nice touch. So
yeah, it's...
Are you interested in the Xiaomi 17 Pro Max then?
Not the 17 Pro Max, because that's crap. That's more of a marketing phone. The one I would... that's not crap. No, I'm not, because it's not... The cameras aren't anywhere near as good as...
As good, yeah.
Yeah.
There's rumours of a new Ultra, isn't there?
The new Ultra is very, very interesting. So instead of having four rear lenses like the 15 Ultra has, I believe the 17 Ultra is three rear lenses because the zoom has continuous zoom. I'm trying to remember what the magnification is. I think there's two optical zoom lenses on the 15 Ultra. I'm just going to open the camera again because I can't remember. You've basically got you've got ultra wide one times, two times is a crop in, but it's still lossless and still really good quality. It's three and then 4.3 times. The 4.3 is the 200 megapixel sensor, which is really high quality on the 15 Ultra. But the Xiaomi 17 Ultra, rumors are, it's only got one zoom lens, but it's variable zoom. So it has all the different zoom lenses.
Sony did, I guess.
Yeah, but probably actually work.
Yeah. So I've always thought of you as someone who goes all in on ecosystems before. Like, you used to get Apple go all in, and then Sammy at times. It's just really interesting to me that you've gone Xiaomi now and gone with a different watch. Have you ever been tempted by some of the other Xiaomi devices at all? Like, their tablets are fantastic, I've heard.
Yeah, so part of the launch offer, I got the Xiaomi tablet, and it was an amazing piece of kit. I mean, really, I had the pen for it, you know, the stylus and everything. Speakers were amazing, screen was amazing, hardware was beautiful, cameras were great. But I've got an iPad, so I didn't need two tablets. So it was just, I used that. I sold it to help towards the cost, basically, of the the phone. But if I didn't have the iPad, I would definitely go for it.
Because the iPad works just still. I see you've mentioned Xiaomi interconnectivity app. Talk us through that. Yes. That's good.
So this is where, if you're thinking about, oh, I can't go leave Apple because of all the, you know, the tie-in, that doesn't really exist as like it used to. So for me, I can AirDrop, and I do AirDrop, from the Xiaomi phone to my iPad or MacBook seamlessly. So I install this Xiaomi interconnectivity app on both the MacBook and on my iPad. And I can either do one of two things. I can either have the phone live up on the screen of the iPad or the MacBook. So I'm actually can control my Xiaomi 15 Ultra and everything that happens on it on either of the Apple devices. What I mainly do is I'll take photos, I'll upload them and save them to Google, but then I'll use the Xiaomi app to, in essence, AirDrop them across using this app to the iPad. So I then save them in my iCloud account as well. It's just an easy way to control devices. And now with RCS messaging, for the people that I do message a lot, they have RCS, so I can send photos on text messages. I know you've got WhatsApp and Telegram and all the other ones, but some people just use text messaging and don't understand the difference.
Yeah.
But at least this way you can, you don't lose, you've still got great connectivity between the two. So yeah, it's, and it makes it sort of seamless and painless. I think that's the best. And the friction has gone away as well.
Yeah, it's interesting because I want to do an app very similar to that. It's really good. It's really good that you can share with your Apple friends.
Yeah, but also I think the if you see what Google did with their Pixel 10, with literally using Android Share to go straight to AirDrop, you can see that that's going to be the future where, because of the European legislation, Apple had to change part of the protocol for AirDrop, which is how Google, I believe, managed to do this workaround. And I can't, whilst Apple may want to try and close that loop, I think it might cause them a lot of regulatory issues if they do that. So we could see Android as a version in the not too distant future, generically being able to use straightforward Android Share and just go straight using AirDrop to an Apple device. That'd be really good.
Yes, I think that's brilliant.
Do you think
I wanna see.
Do you think people in the real world out there, my sister going about her business, no idea about technology or anything else, do you really think that these things are used by ordinary people?
I don't know, but what it does do is the Xiaomi interconnectivity app does do a lot more than that. I'm just trying to summarize the basic things for it, but it's more just trying to remove the barriers that people might have, and it has helped me to really make it great that I can have an iPad, I can have an Android phone, and if someone else wanted to buy any of these devices, you can, they can say, well, actually you can share your photos, and yes, if they're on one of the major networks, they should have RCS messaging, so that shouldn't be an issue anymore. No, you haven't got FaceTime, but then there's WhatsApp video, or there's, you know, there's so many other video options available in terms of doing video.
I was
but
thinking,
it's just one less step, isn't it? One less step of friction.
I was thinking back also to, Gav, to what Joe was saying about the similar system with Honor and the fact that in order to make that happen, you've got to get all your friends to install the Connect, the connecting app onto their iPhone as well, which, you know,
in the real world,
who on earth is going to do that?
So for my wife, I've put the app on her iPhone, so I can, obviously that's the person I'm going to share a lot of photos with. But if I had like key family members, like my mum or whatever, and I was seeing her regularly to airdrop stuff in particular, then that's what I would do. But because you've now got RCS messaging support on iPhone, you don't even need to worry about using AirDrop because you can just message things. And that's the friction gone. And I think if you take what Google's done, which is even better because there is nothing to install, Android Share is just built into all the Android phones. And what Google are saying is you can now AirDrop straight to an iPhone, no extra software needed. And I think that is the magic, that when that is across all Android devices, and I can see that coming, it may take, you know, another 12 months before it fully to be implemented, but I can see that being the norm. That is just a massive barrier gone, massive barrier. So, but also I think, you know, in apart from in America, in the UK and Europe, you know, people do use WhatsApp more. They do use other messaging services. So it's not as, I don't think it's as a big an issue, really.
Yeah, I think going to what Ted's saying, ultimately, in the words of Mandalorian, not getting an app, this is the way. We want that, so it's just seamless. That'd be great if that rolls out. That'd be lovely.
I've got two sisters, and they both have got iPhones, and I noticed just this last couple of weeks that when I was texting with them, SMSing with them, RCSing with them, one of them has got is plugged into RCS, and one of them is still on SMS. When I asked both of them, you know, if that meant anything to them, they just both shrugged. They didn't. It's completely meaningless to them. And I suppose that's what they're after, Gav, is they want people to not even know it's happening, just for it to happen.
Exactly. But that's the beauty of it, isn't it? So I will say that where I have received someone that's on a network that doesn't have RCS support on an iPhone, they can send me a photo and it's in an MMS, comes across as MMS.
Yes.
I can download it. There's an arrow saying you've got a picture waiting to be downloaded. So I tap the arrow, download it. But I don't get charged for receiving that message. But I can't, if I try and send via MMS, I will get charged a ridiculous amount for sending it. So then you do have to use WhatsApp or something. So it'd be amazing when all, and it's normally the networks on iPhone that don't have RCS are the what are they called now, the not
MVNOs
standard. Yeah, that's it. They're the ones, and but they will catch up eventually. They'll be forced to do it, so you know, it all these sort of reasons that Apple had a walled garden. I mean, Google has a walled garden, you know, Xiaomi has it. They all try and lock you in one way or another, but ultimately there's a lot more. The Chinese companies know that to get people across, they have to make apps or ways to transfer and communicate, so you don't have that friction, and that they're being very clever about it. I know other Chinese phones do have, Vivo, for example, do have ways around, you know, and I think even Vivo publicized that on their Chinese version of their Vivo phones, you could connect an Apple Watch somehow. There are definitely, and I think Apple's going to have its hand forced a lot more, that it can't lock down their systems, and they have to allow other smartwatches full access to all the secret APIs. So brands like Garmin and others can actually have full notification support.
Samsung needs to do the same, don't they? Yeah,
it's going to happen. Their hands are going to be, you know, they're not going to, they'll hold out as long as they can, because they're just going to try and make as much money. But ultimately, they will lose, because that's just the way things are going at the moment.
So yeah. Tell me, Gab, if I can just skip back to your accident for a minute. You said that just as an aside, when you said it was May 24 you had your accident, I was really surprised. I thought it was much longer ago than that. I thought it was a couple of years ago at least. So that surprised me. But you said that the Apple Watch Ultra 2 was not up to the job of your recovery, but the Garmin Epix Pro Gen 2 was.
So basically, before the Apple Watch Ultra, I did have a Garmin, and that had helped me get very fit prior to the car accident. And I was speaking to one of the guys I know from MeWe, and he kind of like did like a swap. So he had my Garmin, I took his Apple Watch. It was just interesting to see how the Apple Watch had moved on. What I didn't know was that timing was probably going to be pretty amazing, because obviously the crash detection that is on the software for the Apple Watch, but also the iPhones have it as well. But it was the Apple Watch that had dialed the emergency services. So from that point of view, you can't take away anything from the Apple Watch. But when you want proper fitness metrics, the Apple Watch doesn't cut it. It really doesn't cut it. And the other thing about a Garmin is, you don't need a touchscreen. It does have a touchscreen. You can control it completely via all the buttons. There's five buttons on it. Mm-hmm. And when you understand how to use it, it's fantastic. The Garmin, it's got more sport, the different tracking activities, got more activities than you could ever imagine. You know, if you want to do skydiving, there's a one that does, as you're jumping out the plane, it will show you your altitude as you're, plummeting to the earth. There's apps, there's activity tracking for everything and every variation you could ever imagine. But the beauty is every single activity, every single screen in that activity, you can customize to have the data you want to see, that you need to see on it. It also connects to more equipment, more heart rate straps, better, just a whole wealth of different things.
Right.
And then the real beauty of the Garmin, the one I have, is it has maps, and the maps are built in. You don't have to download anything. And you can actually you can say to it on the watch itself, I'm here, but I want to navigate to over there, find me a route. And it'll plot you a route across whatever terrain you're on. And then you can actually have turn by turn directions that you can do from the watch itself. A lot of smartwatches, cheaper ones, will have the ability to install a map, but you've had to have pre-made the route on a computer or your phone in the phone's app, then send it to the watch and then use that particular route. You can't actually, from the watch itself, say, I need some directions, here I am. Mm-hmm. But the actual fitness metrics that come out of a Garmin are just on a league of their own. And when you're going through such a big recovery journey, those metrics, when you understand them, really help. And when I've had ups and downs, and the watches can tell me that I'm becoming ill or something's going wrong before I know about it, because there'll be warnings in some of the data that show up that something's about to happen, and you can then change what you're doing on that day or 2 days before. You think, something's not right, I'm deteriorating, I need to make some quick changes and rest, really, stop what I'm doing and just rest completely. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But the data is very good. And also, if you want to get fitter, it will recommend what you should be doing on the treadmill or running for that day based on your sleep, on your HRV status, on how much you've been training, how your body is. And it will come up with a recommended program. And if you follow this program, you will get fitter. Reality.
Which you did, because you lost a lot of weight as well, didn't you?
Yeah. So before I had the accident in May last year, I had lost 11 stone in weight. So then I had the car accident, came out, and the thing I had to do was get strength back. I didn't have any cardio fitness because my lungs weren't working properly. So I just had to focus on trying to build strength. So that was like for the first 6 months. And then since April, I've been trying to get my lungs working a bit better, which I am, and trying to get the cardio up. And that's where the watch has really helped me do that. But it's one of these watches where, for me, the Garmin, I don't have to charge it overnight. I mean, that is just, who charges, has to charge a watch every night? That's not a watch. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
This watch is, you know, you charge it every 3 weeks. Cool. When I say every 3 weeks, that's because I use every single function that sits on it. It's active. Now, if I turned off some of the functions, which I could easily do, I would get even longer than 3 weeks, probably a month and a bit. There is versions of the Garmin that have solar on the screens where it draws in, can recharge, partially recharge itself using the solar and light. And there is actually one version of the Garmin that if you lived in a bright, you know, environment and were outdoors a lot, you would never need to charge it. It would be able to keep charging itself. And that's just, you know, it's nice to think I could go away for 2 weeks and not take a charge with me.
Yeah. Are they very expensive?
They are, but what you do, you don't buy the current model at full price. You buy last year's version, the year before that.
Yeah.
And it's like a third of the price.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, half the price, you know, depending on how old you go. Because ultimately, even one that's last year's model, it's got so much functionality and they're built like tanks, you know, really solid stuff that you just don't need. This thing about having the latest of everything, you don't need to do that with Garmin. Where I have some of my gym rehab, the owner there, he's got a model that's 4 years old and it just looks great, you know, and he's all the time, you know, he's outdoors a lot. And it still does everything you could possibly want. And it's 4 years old. And when you see some of the people, there was another person at the gym, they had a Garmin watch which was 7 years old and still working.
Yeah,
very good. So it's a different mentality. You know, these people that have Garmins, they generally don't change them every year. They change them every 5, 6, 7 years, something like that.
So that's an investment, isn't it? Yeah.
It is. And I mean, when you think about that, it actually isn't that expensive when you divide it over a number of years that you keep it. I don't need to change this. There's been two new models since this one I've got, and I've had, there's no interest in me changing it. You know, it looks brilliant, looks like a watch, and it's just been fantastic.
Great.
I have two clocks, so when I look at the display, if I push and hold on the time on the display, it switches to clock face number two. Clock face number or clock screen number two is a complete, still shows me the time, but all the other metrics are completely different. And I can then press again, go back to the first clock face screen that has the basic metrics that I need to see. And then when I want to see some more detailed stuff, I press and get a completely different clock, you know, face, clock face. But I can have, they're permanent. They're not like, you can decide which one you want. Or I can do a double flick of the wrist to change it using gestures, but I don't like that. I just like to press and hold and change it manually when I want to see the other metrics. But that's an option that I've used or I've set up. But there's things you can also, it has a torch light. So if I double press the top left button, it turns on the flashlight, which is super powerful. It's adjustable as well on brightness. And it can also go from white light to red. So if you are running, just imagine you're running, you can actually set the cadence that when your hand is behind you, it shows red. And when your arm is up running, it's white in front. So mirrors, car headlamps, white at the front, brake lights at the back.
Very cool. The other thing I wanted to press you on a bit further, if you don't mind, is we've started our Camera Creations podcast, and there has been talk of this Insta 360 X5 over there. I know it's not a phone, but it'd be quite interesting to just explore that and ask you your thoughts on that. Particularly, I was questioning the sensor size and actually if it could be used as a camera and not a video machine. What are your thoughts on that?
So it's a very, very good piece of kit. And again, it's sort of piece of kit that the software has got better the longer I've had it. I wouldn't change that. I wouldn't upgrade it because for me, the beauty of that is you have an extended selfie stick, and I've got two versions. One is 1.2 meters long. A stick that extends to 1.2 meters. Then I have the ultra extended carbon selfie stick that goes up to 3 meters. But the concept with that, Ted, is you just turn it on, press the record button, and it's recording video in 8K over two lenses in 360. So you're in it, what you're seeing in front, sides, behind, back, up, down, everywhere is record, video is recorded. Now, what you can do, you can have it to take still pictures. You can have it to take 360 degree pictures and export them. But even though the sensor size of the optics is big, and even though it's saying it's doing 8K and all the rest of it, what you see or what you decide to frame won't be in 8K. So the video, even though it records in 8K, if I say I force the video to record and point in a certain direction, then maybe halfway through change and face me, that video, which is flat, that I'm showing or exporting is in 4K. Because you're taking the keyframing it a certain way. And the same applies to photos. It might have a massive resolution, but it's still, I would say for photos, yes, you can, and yes, you can do a 360 photo, which is interesting because you can do a snapshot and spin it around and see everything. But you will lose a bit of quality because you're doing such a wide circumference, if that makes sense, rather than, take my Xiaomi 15 Ultra. It's static. It's a 16 by, and it's a 4x3 sensor. And all the pixels are just in that 4x3. Whereas the Insta 360 X5, it's over, you know, it's a whole 360 sensor. You can just use either the back or the front lens. You don't have to use both if you want to take photos. But there are a few tricks that it can do with photography. But to be honest, because I got the 15 Ultra for photography, I would always use the 15 Ultra. And if I was what I've used the X5 for, Insta 360 X5, is if I'm walking with my dog, I can hold it on the selfie stick, just press record and just record 6 1-minute clips, put them into the app, hit auto edit, and it makes a beautiful hi guys. I might have 6 minutes of footage, and at that 6 minutes it'll make a 40-second video clip of me walking the dog with special effects. It'll look like there's a drone, I'm being followed by a drone, or I'm not, right. The camera, this has disappeared completely because it erases the selfie stick and the camera. And it's waterproof, it's resilient, and it's easy. And there are loads of special effects you can do, but it just works really well. And the quality of the video is interesting to watch. And it looks good as well. It does look good.
That removing the stick is just amazing. I was just looking at their website and they were demonstrating how that works. And it's just stunningly good, isn't it?
It's very simple because the selfie, basically, you think the depth, the thickness of the device, the selfie stick's thinner than the thickness of the device. Mm-hmm. And because the two lenses are mounted, you know, on opposite sides, basically anything in between the two cameras, which is the thickness of the device, is invisible. And what the software does, it stitches the two bits together you don't see the stitching. That's why it's invisible. But yeah, the only time you'll see that is if there's some bright sunlight and you just have to have the reflection of the shadow of the selfie stick in the footage, which can happen. And that's funny because people can see your hands holding out, you know, you're holding a selfie stick, but there's no selfie stick there. But again, it does happen. But if you know how to hold it, you won't have that problem. You won't hold it a certain way into the sun, basically.
So the big question, Gab, is why are you not putting these lovely videos on your YouTube channel while you've not been well enough to do any YouTube videos?
Very simply, Ted, that I work 3 days a week, and on that's 3 days, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. And on the Monday, Wednesday and Saturday are spent in recovery. So I'm doing lots of stuff for my recovery, from fitness to physio, counselling. And then Sunday, I'm absolutely exhausted and I rest.
Time.
So it's one of those things where, I'm getting better. I'm a lot better than I was when I came out of hospital. I still have a few issues that have been worked on in terms of recovery. But, you know, I think the physio, the NHS physio that I went to see, explained to me, which would be nice to have known from the beginning, that roughly for every month you're hospitalised takes up to around about 5 months of recovery.
Wow.
Post when you leave. So if I was a patient for 5 months, well, 5 times 5 is 25 months, 2 years roughly.
Wow.
And I've done a year, done a whole year, year and a bit now, year and 3 months. Mm-hmm. So I'll get there. It's just a long journey.
Yeah,
There may be that not everything does recover fully. That's the other thing. But for me, being fit and healthy is priority number one. I will go back to doing the YouTube when I've got the time, because it does take, it's not just about uploading the videos. It does take time to do.
It certainly does.
The editing, the audio, you know, as I explained to you, the mic system I'm using was one that was going to use going forward on my videos, and it's state-of-the-art stuff. It's a brilliant, brilliant DJI mic system, and it works really well. And it's the first time I've probably used it in earnest. I've had it for a good few years now. I've not been able to use it. But
just a couple of questions on the YouTube channel. Are you going to go back to what you used to do, or is it going to be different?
That's a good question. I think probably, because that's, and some of the companies, that audio companies, have dropped me, you know, messages saying, you know, you're going to come back. We've liked, you know, because they liked what I did. And it does take time. It's easy to record the stuff, but sometimes when you're reviewing things, you've got to actually review the items. You've got to spend time. You know, if it's headphones, for example, you've got to listen, you've got to compare them, make notes. I have a playlist that I use. So I used to listen to all the tracks. They were different genres of music to see how each headphone worked. And then when you have Bluetooth headphones, then you've got, and they've got noise cancelling. You know, it's not just about how they sound. It's, does the app work? What's the functionality? Is it firmware upgradable? What's the noise cancellation like? What do the mics sound like? What about in a noisy environment, in a quiet environment, comfort? You know, there's so many different aspects.
Yeah.
And just because I may not like the sound signature doesn't mean that someone else won't. So it's just, you've got to describe, give them an honest opinion of what type of signature the sound is. And some people like V-shaped, bass-heavy sounding headphones, but if you listen to a lot of different genres of music, sometimes you need a more balanced sound to get the enjoyment, and mid-range becomes very important. So it's just a time element. And at the minute, my time is focused on getting back to 100% fitness and health. But the good news is that from being in a hospital, I plummeted in weight when I was in hospital, as you can imagine. So I re-put all the weight I lost back on, and then I added, when I was trying to get my strength back, I added more weight back on. So the 11 stone crept, became less than 11 stone weight loss. But I needed to bulk up again to get some strength.
Yeah.
And then I've then been cutting. So I'm over 11 stone weight loss. So I'll be probably something like 12 and a half stone weight loss from when I originally started by the end of this year. And then I have a decision to make whether I don't need to lose any more weight. My BMI and everything will be absolutely perfect. Muscle mass percentages will be amazing. And then it's just, what do I do next? I don't know.
So one thing I was just thinking, Gavin, for you, I think you could make amazing content with, look, could inspire others with your rehab and all that. But you could integrate tech with that.
I agree, Joe. I think it's something that there's a lot of knowledge that I've built up because of all the experts that I've had to help me.
You can share that knowledge and build in the tech side of it as well, though.
And also, I've had to, not being funny, it's been really hard. You know, I've had to work and focus. And it's not, I'm still not saying it's an easy journey. I'm still on that journey.
Absolutely.
And mentally, it's been very, very tough as well. So there's the physicality side of it that, you know, you think I can just about get from a car to the entrance of the house. This is ridiculous. I can't lift anything. Where's my strength gone? And, you know, you just have to, and being in so much pain, and I'm still in pain now, a lot of pain actually, but I still have nerve damage. So I've got loads of nerve damage pain, but it's just like, you know, you just have to push through it or just, I don't know how I've got through some of it, to be honest, but you can either drown your sorrows and not get out of bed every day or think I'm going to have to move. It's going to be painful. Well, I've got to do this because if I don't, I won't get any better. And why should some idiot of a driver who did this to me win, you know?
Exactly. Exactly, because I've noticed we have the app wrap now, don't we, have Ted? Mm. And I've noticed his app is to do with fitness. Do you want to cover that, Gavin?
Yeah, so one thing that I would recommend is that if you're looking to try and lose weight, just do it the old-fashioned way and use a calorie deficit, but track your food. So my tip is there's an app called NutriCheck, food tracking app. And this is great if you're in the UK, this particular app, because its food database is the best. Do not waste time with MyFitnessPal. It is not the same. It is not as good as it used to be. It's about, NutriCheck is a subscription. If you Google discount code for NutriCheck, you will find somewhere there's a discount code on the internet. And the cheapest way to get the price is to use a normal computer with a web browser and do the subscription through a web browser, not on the Google Store or Apple App Store, because you'll get 13 months for the price of 12 plus with about 20% or 25% off. So it's about £27 a year, and I've used it for several years now, and I absolutely swear by it. It also has good connectivity with things like Google Health Connect, Apple Health, Samsung Health, Garmin Connect, Fitbit, and so on. So it does sync the data very nicely. And yeah, from that point of view, it's great. So what it does, you can set up what you're trying to do. It can recommend, based on the parameters you put in, what your goals should be. And it'll also give you the food macros, from basic stuff, from fat, protein, and carbs, but then it will go into fiber, salt, sugars, healthy sugars, and it, you know, gives you a full breakdown, loads of data. It's also everything, your whole diary is shareable. So if you weren't sure what you were doing wrong, you could ping me a message and I could look at it. I could see everything you've eaten, every meal, the breakdown, the macros, what you're trying to achieve, and you could see where you're going right or wrong. For me, because I've been using it first to bulk and then now to cut, the macro, once you understand your body and the food macros, you can really, really helps having good data, basically, and data that you can sync into other apps and services. So it works very well. It's very easy to use. And, you know, my tip would be that if you're trying to lose weight or gain weight, don't reinvent your food that you take, that you do every day, because you'll fail. Just put everything for a week that you honestly have eaten, drunk, into the app, and just see where you're, what you're doing, how many calories you're doing per day. And when you've done that, just see what could you tweak to get the into a bit of a deficit. Don't be stupid and put you want to lose 2 pounds a week. Increase your calories per day to lose a pound a week, because you'll do it and you'll survive it for much longer if you're not trying to starve yourself. 2 pound deficit a week is a lot of calories to lose when you're trying to, you know, do this for the first time. Just do a pound a week, half a pound to a pound a week, and enjoy the extra calories you get with that particular amount of food. And then you need to look at protein intake. Don't worry about the carbs and fat for the time being. You can Google how much protein should I be eating. And I can guarantee you, you're not having anywhere near enough protein per day. Because when you lose weight, what you don't want to do is actually lose muscle mass, because then you're getting weaker. What you want to lose is body fat, but maintain muscle mass. To maintain muscle mass, you need higher protein, and you need to be going to the gym or walking more or something to keep yourself more active. And if you're older, like 40 plus, you definitely want to be lifting weight 3 times a week if you can do it, or something that makes your muscles grow, some form of exercise where you use your muscles. But okay. The app helps you as a tool to hit these goals.
Thanks, Gav. That's great. NutriCheck, and as Gav says, available for all the platforms, and plugs in the data to all the platforms too. We're going to be leaping to straight onto photo of the week in a second. But before we do that, just one thing I just wanted to cover by Scott Weddington, which is the fact that he wants to talk about the new OnePlus watch coming out. Now, Joe, you're a fan of OnePlus watches, aren't you?
I am indeed. Yeah, I've got the OnePlus Watch 2, and I really enjoy it. So this is intriguing for me. What I like the look of the cross OS and dual phone pairing. That sounds very interesting, because I'm always carrying more than one phone. So having it connected to two Android devices would be great.
And one iPhone.
And one iPhone if you want. Which a lot of the YouTubers do, don't they? Not myself, but a lot of the YouTubers do that. So being able to connect to two phones, one iPhone, one Android, or two Androids, fantastic. Mm. I've not seen that of any other watches. I don't know if you guys have.
No, I don't think so. Apart from the Garmin, obviously, that we were just talking about. But yeah, it's got a bright display as well, and it's thin, and apparently it's coming out on the 17th of December, which is, what day is it today? The 8th.
And it's not, I will say, from what I read about the OnePlus, the one you've got, Joe, from what I've seen, it's a really nice looking watch, because I do like the look of it, and I like what they've done with the display and how it all works. But I don't think, from some of the reviews I saw online, the data wasn't particularly accurate.
Yeah, I've seen this. Now, I'm a bit of a fatty, so I don't really use it for the health and fitness side of things. but yeah, I've seen that as well, Gavin, actually.
Yeah, but it's looking promising, this one, because it's saying that it's got lactate threshold. That's really important. So it'll be interesting. I mean, maybe that this next version will improve on the weaknesses of the first, and if they could do that, you know, that could be really interesting. It's always good to have a bit of competition.
Yeah, definitely.
And it sounds like Joe and me, we need to go and get NutriCheck installed.
Yeah.
So we're not so fatties. Right, let's leap down to photo of the week. And I picked one by Pip Tomlinson, who is our Spanish listener, of course. Well, he's not Spanish, but he lives in Spain. Airport, he's entitled it, which he took on the Apple iPhone 17 Pro Max. And I really, this leapt out at me because it's just an interesting image. image, really, with lots of different stuff going. The frame is packed with all sorts of stuff, colours and lights and shadows and shades and reflections and lines. Very, very arty, I thought. And in the middle of it, kind of sat behind all the foreground shapes and interesting stuff, is the back end of an EasyJet aircraft, which is really interesting as well. So I picked that as my photo of the week. Gav, any thoughts?
Yeah, I like the contrast of it as well and the reflections. I really like that. It's nice.
Mm-hmm. Joe?
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting one. Makes me think of Luton with the EasyJet side of it. Yeah, it's an interesting one.
Yeah, so well done, Pip. Nice one. Keep them coming. And just before we go, classifieds, if you want to join classifieds, you'll need to email me and we'll talk about it. It's a members-only group and we do try and control the membership there. I saw in there a Steve Bradshaw's selling a Google Pixel 10, 256 gigabytes, 12 gigabytes, case, box, screen protectors in indigo blue, supreme condition. 100% battery health, £460. And that was my pick, really. But I think, Gav, we were saying earlier that it's a bit slim pickings in there this week, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very slim.
So I probably Oppo, not much.
Yeah, I think the Oppo for me, the Find X9 Pro, wasn't it? It's one option, but it's not much. I think it's that time of year, really.
Yeah, of course. So nothing left for you, Joe.
I've got a couple of picks.
Oh, you've got two.
I've got a couple of picks. But as it's phone show chat, it's a bit naughty because one's the Nintendo Switch OLED, which Neil Bowers has got on there. Because I've always wanted one. I probably won't use it much.
Mm-hmm.
And that watch I keep banging on about is still on there, and it's now reduced to £135. The GT6 Pro by Huawei. But Andy Morris has got that up now.
Oh, yeah.
£135. I mean, I wish I could, but I can't because of Christmas.
Yeah. Think of your wife and daughter.
Yeah.
You can't let them starve on the street. Thanks ever so much, Gav, for joining us this week. It's been great. It's been really interesting to just let you have the floor and let you run with it. We don't normally do that, and that's been really interesting. Be interesting to see what the feedback.
Carried away a bit, but.
Yeah, no, it's fine. It was really interesting to just let it flow and see where it went. So it'll be interesting to see what feedback we get from that.
Yeah, I think,
Gavin, you should really consider doing content on that, because you seem very passionate about the fitness and the tech together. So, yeah, definitely think about doing that. I think it would be really useful for people as well.
When he's recovered.
I think when you get to the ages that we all are, I think some of the knowledge I've learned and stuff I've learned, I think you're right, Joe, I think it would actually help a lot of people. So
yeah,
don't push yourself though, Gav. Do it when you're ready. I think you recognize that yourself, of course. Don't forget the Nomad Tech Project. Do you know, I completely forgot to watch last night, Joe. Was it a gripping show?
Of course, it's always a gripping show.
Sam and Joe.
We actually had Jason from the Tech Disruptors, because they've got a little break at the moment.
Okay.
So he come and joined us as guest.
All right, good. Yeah, Sam and Joe with guests sometimes do this thing on YouTube on Sunday evenings, and it's usually about an hour, and it's really quite entertaining. So do tune into that. Phoneshowchat.uk is our website. TedSalmon.com is where you'll find everything if you get lost. And it's also on Podhub UK, of course, and we'll be back in a week's time, Joe and I, to just the two of us, to kind of catch up on all the stuff that is now backlogged up, and we'll talk about lots of interesting new phones and stuff we've been dabbling with. So thanks very much for listening to you, to everyone, and we'll be back again next week. Take care now.
Yeah, bye.